proposal. We understand the desire for the property owner to achieve a return on investment on the property. Let me just emphasize again two critical areas of concern. First, you've heard already, the physical character of the site, including the existence of seeps and springs outside the environmental zone. I would emphasize Chapter 333, 635-100, which requires that existing contours and drainage patterns of the site must be left intact wherever practical. In fact, the proposed development is in direct conflict with this requirement, as the entire developable portion of the site is being regraded and all contours changed. The proposed home sites, together with the regrading and rerouting of runoff, will have a significant negative impact on the wetland portion of the site as well as the stream system. You've already heard about that. Springs that exist on the site flow into the wetlands, and water is discharged versus a stream channel through a culvert into a tributary of Pendleton Creek and ultimately into Fennel Creek. As noted by previous expert testimony, there are a myriad of negative effects that will result from this proposal on a watershed that is the subject of the city's own conservation plan, including water temperature, pollution mitigation, etc. The second issue critical to the neighborhood you also have already heard about, and that is the presumed requirement that two segments of Southwest Pendleton be connected. It is our opinion, our assertion, that no compelling reason for such connection to be required, and in prior testimony, PBAT staff has suggested that the connectivity goal supersedes other considerations on this terrain and whether traffic requirements exist. I'm just going to, if I may, conclude. I will leave my written testimony. The sidewalks that are proposed really only are on the perimeter of the property, and they connect to no other sidewalks in the area. In fact, Southwest Portland is notoriously absent has a deficit in sidewalks.
Okay.
Southwest 48 from Southwest Cameron to the adjacent site is a substandard road. It's narrow, filled with potholes.
I have to ask you to wrap up. You've gone
well
beyond 3
and
minutes.
Let me just say that the count that PBOT staff achieved in no way mirrors the actual use of Southwest 48th Street that occurs on a daily basis, rain or shine. I'll leave my written testimony, and I thank you for your time.
Mm-hmm. Ms. King, you mentioned the 200 trees that are currently on the property. Do you happen to know how many of those will be preserved under the plan?
I believe we submitted that in the past, and it has escaped my memory right now, but we can get that information for you. Thank you.
I have a question first. I didn't bring a picture, but do you want to show them? I want to show you a picture of 48th. Can she use my phone? I don't want to step over the thing. Is that okay? There weren't any pictures of 48th.
Just give us your name for the record.
Oh, sorry. I'm Brynna Hurwitz. I'm co-land use chair of Hayhurst. Thank you very much for having us here, and it's an honor to be here. So the main thing I wanted to talk about is Southwest 48th and the safe route to school, because what's difficult is with all the maps, there was nothing about Southwest 48th from Cameron to Southwest Pendleton. So if you have that little bad map ahead in front of you that I gave you for Randy, if you look at Southwest Cameron, thank you so much, I appreciate that, and then you look at Southwest 45th. Southwest 45th from Cameron to Southwest Pendleton is not going to be improved at all. That is your major safe route to school. That's your major way. There's no sidewalks. There's potholes. It has a steeper grade. It's 10% versus what's actually acceptable is 8%. And then, Mr. Saltzman, you asked Commissioner Saltzman about why would you skip Cameron, and that's an excellent question. And here's the funny thing. The church on Cameron and 48th, they now have a sign saying no cross-through because people go through the church parking lot to avoid about 4 seconds of a drive. So here you're going on 45th, right, coming from Vermont, and you're heading toward Beaverton Hillsdale, heading north, I think that is. And then you go, and there's a 90% turn, hook like that, and you're at the top of Cameron, and you come down. If you could avoid that, and you're on 45th, and you go, I'm just going to go through this neighborhood, and I come out on 48th, I've missed a 90% angle of a turn and a flat downhill with no sidewalks where people sometimes walk. So it will be used as a shortcut. It really will be. What I'm worried about is we've been fortunate to have no fatalities, not many accidents so far. But just the other night, I came home from Cameron. I turned onto Southwest 48th, and I'm familiar with it, so I was driving super slowly. But there's two people walking and another car put on the brakes. Okay, we're all fine. But those of us who live there every day, I'm thinking this is just an accident waiting to happen. It's unimproved. You're swiggling around to get out of the potholes. There's no sidewalks. And it's really a well-used path from Southwest Cameron all the way to Iowa. So that's a really big concern. And I know, as I said, I wish I had a map we could all look at. But the new streets that are going to have the sidewalks have nothing to do with that major arterial. So if we didn't have to have that connectivity coming through, which will be a shortcut, and additionally all those houses will have cars that will use 48th, because 48th is your closest way to Beaverton Hillsdale, grocery stores, Beaverton, any of the major areas where you're going to go. And that is Southwest 48th. That's how you're going down there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I need to ask you to email that photo to Carla
so
it can be entered into the record.
No
Thank
problem
you.
At all. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Nathan Hale. I am a licensed landscape architect in the state of Oregon. I currently live exactly catty corner to this piece of property. I live just northwest of the Pendleton 48th intersection. My family has owned and lived in the house I'm currently in since 1968. So we do have a lot of history in the neighborhood with the people who used to own the property across the street from us as well. I'd like to take a couple notes of stuff that kind of gets muddied up with all the terminology and all that stuff. Some things to note is, yes, definitely with a new construction, this portion of Pendleton will be safer. But nothing else will. Just this one block section of Pendleton. You're creating sidewalks that have already been brought up that have no connectivity. They're putting in sidewalks that earlier they stated that the safe route to school that my daughter uses goes through private property, but they're putting sidewalks to this supposed private property that nobody uses. I think a big question that keeps getting avoided is, technically my address is Southwest 48th, and I have no sidewalks. There will be no improvements to my property other than the flow of traffic, other than construction, other than damage to my street. And my concern is that, yes, 48th will, or Southwest Pendleton will be safer. Can someone look me in the eye and say 48th will be safer? It can't. The additional traffic will not make it safer. Okay? I've walked to school with my daughter and her. She's very friendly in the neighborhood. With more than 8 children at any one time. A lot of those people are in this room, and we're very good friends with each other. I think something that hasn't been brought up is also recently City of Portland PPS changed the school boundaries. Those school boundaries have extended more to the north, bringing more students through our neighborhood than ever before. And I don't think that's been accounted for in all this stuff, is that there has been a growing number of students coming to Hayhurst now. I think another note to make is that, yes, there are other ways to get to Iowa other than Southwest 48th. But I can tell you right now that none of those are the same. I had submitted them prior where every other way through to Iowa to the south of this property is a trail at best. A lot of those are on private property. This is the one that children on bikes can use, people in wheelchairs can use. It's the only really accessible route. The next route you know is Southwest 45th that nobody can walk down. Another note worth saying is, I don't think, you know, we talk about water and all this stuff, and really the scale of the impermeable surface that we're trying to create hasn't been addressed. I mean, we have currently two houses, a house and a garage that maybe cover 3,000 square feet, and we're going to cover it with over 10,000 square feet of impermeable space.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
I have a couple questions.
Yeah.
Is the preference of the neighborhood that the street be a cul-de-sac or dead end? Because it clearly needs
We've seen versions that would allow a mirrored image on Pendleton, which would allow 6 houses on the south side of Pendleton, and then on the upper portion of Pendleton, basically creating a cul-de-sac with five more houses, which would still give you the number you want and not require a through street.
And then my other question is, as in regards to the safe route to school, that is an unpaved path through private property? Or
That path used to be a through street with cars and traffic and everything. It's a gravel path, but I mean it's a road's width, so it's not a trail. It's a 10-foot wide single lane road that goes through there.
Where is that in relation to the environmental area? Is
it? It would be just to the west of that.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
And then my final question is: as far as sidewalks and surrounding streets, I mean that's clearly not the responsibility of the developer. Are you saying that you would want the city to provide additional sidewalks?
What I'm saying is that when somebody says they're putting a sidewalk and it makes it safer, it doesn't make it safer for me. It makes it safer for the 11 houses that are going in. That's it. The people walking through are going to walk in the street, walk on the sidewalk in front of 11 houses, and then get back in the street. That's all that's allowed. It hasn't allowed for connectivity from Gabriel Park to Hayhurst School or Gabriel Park. There's no connectivity there. The connectivity is in the street.
Sure.
So people are forced to walk in the street. So this little bit of sidewalk, we're never going to be able to improve 48th, and I don't expect sidewalks to be everywhere. What I'm trying to say is that even though, yes, this one block will be safer, everything around it won't be. And I don't live on Pendleton. I live on 48th and Pendleton. So it does have an effect.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next three are Dennis Call, Leslie Hammond, and Peggy McSorley. And then the last three who signed up are Sarah Silkey, Benton Van Warmer, and Greg Zupan.
Welcome.
My name is Dennis Call, and I live at 5721 Southwest 48th Avenue. It's on an unimproved street of 48th. I have been at that location going on 50 years. So I've seen a lot of changes in the neighborhood. From the intersection of 48th and Flower Court to Cameron Road, the responsibility and care and maintenance of that part of 48th has been on the residents. Neither the city nor the county claims responsibility for the maintenance. That street is filled constantly with potholes. It is not passable by two cars at one time, either going to and from. It is constantly filled with people, kids going to and from school, dog walkers, joggers, and bicyclists. And contrary to the report, there's more than 8 kids going to school on that street. I see a ton of kids going through there on a daily basis. So this project, as it's presented, an enormous increase in the daily car and truck traffic over unimproved section of 48th. So I'm asking the committee to consider the magnitude of this negative impact on the safety and wellness of this part of the neighborhood. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Leslie Hammond, and I have a house on the corner of Southwest 47th and Pendleton. And I would agree that by putting a through road, you're going to have a lot more traffic that comes through that part of the neighborhood because they will cut the corner and they won't go up to 45th to come. They won't go up Cameron to 45th to come down. But I got involved with this because when I got noticed that the development was coming, I went down to the city and talked to Stephanie about what the plans were. And saw and noticed that most of the trees were going to disappear. And most importantly, for me personally, there is a gigantic 50 to 60 foot western cedar that anchors the back corner of my property. My property runs right across the top of where the building site will be. And there's a big tree in the right-of-way that actually pushes under my fence that anchors that corner of my property. I have a retaining wall behind my property to make sure it doesn't fall down the ravine that's right below it. And so I asked if the western cedar could be saved instead of cut down. The entire right-of-way along my property is all trees and bushes and this big tree. And the tree, of course, is very healthy and in good shape. So I've been trying to work with the urban forester to see if that tree could be saved from demolition because the development is coming in. I am happy to accept new neighbors because I have been following the residential infill project and the affordability issues very closely for the last year and trying to sort of sort out what I thought, what reasonable solutions there might be. Personally, I think 11 houses on the steepness of this ravine, and I encourage you to go out and look at it, is way too many. And I also think, so I would suggest that the number of houses be cut back. But if that's not possible, we definitely should do a cul-de-sac and not a through street, which will preserve the safe road for the kids on the other side. I didn't even know about the safe roads to the kids until earlier this year because I'm a brand new homeowner in the area. But it is really, really valuable. And anything that this council can do to keep it the way it is will keep it safe because we don't have a lot of cars that go down that street. And if you make a through street, we will have a lot of cars to go through. And, of course, cars actually create the danger for the kids. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi. My name is Sarah Silkey. Peggy McSorley would have been next, but she said other people have said what she was going to say. I live across the street from the proposed development, and I agree with most of what my fellow neighbors have said along the way here. I have to say I've spent a lot of time reading the city code and the approval criteria because my understanding is it's not what the neighborhood wants, it's what the city code says. What's really interesting to me about the city code and these approval criteria is that all of them say to the extent possible, where practical, if there are not serious other considerations. And what the city staff have decided is that the car connectivity is the most important criteria for this development. And in order to achieve that, we have to do extreme grading, which would not otherwise be permissible. We have to remove the vast majority of the trees. I don't have the exact number, but I think there's only like 3 or 4 that are the good trees that are going to be kept. That western red cedar she's talking about is right in the line of this proposed road. So I would love to have new neighbors. I have young kids. They like playing with other kids. My sister wants to buy a house. There's nothing affordable. Like, new houses are good. But this street going through and making us sacrifice the trees, sacrifice the hydrology, sacrifice all of these other approval criteria. I mean, the language is there to allow you guys to decide whatever is allowable. Like, I can see that. But it's frustrating because they're saying, well, you know, we can't make any exception on the connectivity criteria. This must happen. But these other ones, well, there's this problem, and so we're going to go around it. And I wish I were a lawyer so that I could present this more clearly. But I, you know, just take a look at the big picture here. Like, we can have houses, we can have development. We're at a point in Portland where, this is not a property you would develop if you had lots of choices. But, you know, we need more houses. It's a swamp. We have to develop our swamps now, but let's do it carefully. Let's look at it twice. Let's say maybe if we don't have to have a paved road that's heavy enough for trucks to go through, we can have a pedestrian and a bikeway. We can have a cul-de-sac. We can get 11 houses in there, and we can do it right. Thank you.
The last two who signed up are Benton Van Wormer and Greg Zupan.
Welcome.
I guess it's just me.
Yeah, please state your name for the record.
My name is Benton Van Warmer, and I just wanted to provide a kind of experience from me growing up there. I was actually a child who grew up in the neighborhood, so I just wanted to kind of give that experience. So I grew up in the neighborhood, and coincidentally, one of the previous owners of this property in question was my babysitter. So definitely, as you can hear from everyone here, a tight-knit neighborhood. I spent my childhood biking, walking, playing in this neighborhood. Not one time did I feel that I was unsafe, not many cars going through. I have to know that this is because there was dead ends at every street. You're only going to where you're going. You're not going to be able to go through. So more importantly, my parents didn't worry when I was in the street. And ultimately, I fear that this will no longer be the case if this becomes a through street. Not only will children not be able to use this area to be able to grow up and be able to play in the streets, but parents won't feel the same comfort that my parents were lucky enough to have with this street being a dead end. And that's all I had here, but I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Okay, next up is the principal opponent. Welcome.
Thank you, President Udaly. We're going to do this in order. Mr. Rimmers is going to start. I'll go next, and then Mr. Peoples will finish, and I'll give my name when I introduce myself for my testimony.
Great. And Vic? Lauren, just to clarify, it says 15 minutes. Okay. So, yes, you have 15 minutes.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Thank you for your time today to hear our testimony on a 11-home site subdivision in the Hayhurst neighborhood. My name is Vic Remmers, and I have been a lifetime resident here in Portland. I actually grew up in Southwest Portland, not too far from this site. I'm also one of the owners of Everett Custom Homes. With me today, we have our consultants, which include Mike Robinson from Perkins Coie, Mike Peebles from OTEC Engineering, Wade Scarborough from Kettleson Associates. And we're here to answer any of your questions that you might have and to explain why city staff and the hearings officer made the right decision approving the 11 home site subdivision. I just want to note that I work with your city staff on a regular basis, and I just want to commend them on doing an excellent job reviewing the approval criteria and making the correct decision of approving our subdivision. We intend to build 11 new homes here on this property that will blend in with the neighborhood. And you're going to hear from Mike Robinson as to why our development meets all the approval criteria and why it was approved. That's all I have. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Vic. Good afternoon, President Udaly, members of the City Council. My name is Mike Robinson. I'm here on behalf of the applicant today. So I'm going to do just a few minutes and then turn it over to Mike. So first of all, I appreciate the tone of the discussion. This has been a good discussion about how we implement the zoning code, and I think it's frankly been very helpful. So we appreciate the opportunity to engage you in this. I remind you, as you heard today, that staff recommended approval of this application. The hearings officer approved it. And I think the first thing I want to note is he did so very thoughtfully. He has a 54-page opinion. The first six or seven pages respond to every issue raised by the Neighborhood Association. He took them seriously, we took them seriously, and the staff took them seriously. And that's why you ended up with a 54-page opinion. With respect to traffic, he has eight or nine pages that deal with all the transportation issues. So I would commend you, and I'll ask for the record to be held open, and we won't waive our final written argument. I would commend you to take the time, if you've not done so, to read those pages. So let me just say a few things before I take too much of Mike's time. First of all, if you've noted the zoning map, we're developing in the same zone as our neighbors are located in, R7, and we're doing 11 lots, 11 new homes for families to occupy. I think the maximum is 12, so we're not even doing the maximum number of dwellings. And as the witness just testified to, housing affordability is an important issue in this city. Every time we ratchet down the number of units or make it harder to develop, the people that suffer are the home buyers, not the developer, not the property owner, but the people that have to pay for the home. We're doing what the code requires us to do. Let me just talk then about a few issues. Traffic safety. You have in the record the only traffic impact analysis, as Fabio said, that was professionally prepared. It's done by Kilson and Associates. You have PBOT evidence as to why the criteria for traffic safety are satisfied. We've not seen Mr. Healy's written testimony. It's not a traffic impact analysis, but we'll be looking forward to responding to that. Tree removal, I think the only thing that would be helpful for me to say is if you look at the hearings officer's decision at page 17, he cites the criteria for tree removal. The very first criteria is consideration of the specific development proposed. So tree removal is not considered in isolation. It's considered in the context of what's before the decision maker. And let me talk lastly about connectivity. I don't think I've ever been in a hearing where people favored connectivity. Lots of reasons people like dead-end streets. But the reality is, since 1991, when LCDC adopted the transportation planning rule, our state's goal, the metro's goal, and the city's goal has been to get these disconnected streets connected. And it benefits not just cars, but pedestrians, bicycles, emergency vehicles, all the people that use our street. And your criterion in 33654 absolutely requires, as long as none of the exceptions are present, and that's not the case here, absolutely requires connectivity. So the hearings officer made the right decision. His decision is based on substantial evidence. We agreed with all the conditions of approval in his decision, and if this council has additional conditions they'd like to suggest, my sense is we'll probably agree with those as well. Thank you for your time today.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Peebles. I'm a registered civil engineer with OTAC. We're a consulting firm who's been working with Edward Holmes on this application. OTAC is providing, in a collaborative effort, the civil engineering, landscape, stormwater management, and land use planning for the application. As Vic mentioned, we also have a team of professionals on our team for geotechnical engineering, environmental, traffic, and as well as an arborist. So a team that's it's worked very hard on this application. We appreciate the staff's assistance and input on the application. I wanted to touch on four key items relative to the appeal: the site design and alternatives, stormwater management, the environmental zone, wetlands, seeps and springs, as well as the tree removal and mitigation. Stephanie's presentation sort of doubled up here, so I'll move through some of the redundant information. Existing conditions of the site from a constraint standpoint, 48th Avenue on the west side in the southwest corner, there's environmental zone that we had to avoid. Pendleton Street to the east side, as well as everyone has noted, steep grades on site. There's about a 38-foot drop from the east side to the west side, so there's a lot of grade within that existing ground sloped area. 48th Avenue to the west of the site being an unimproved a gravel road. Pendleton to the north of the site being a paved road with houses to the north and a substreet of Pendleton on the east side. And both Pendleton streets are both at about a 12% grade, so they're fairly steep running from the east to the west. Our site layout incorporated roadway improvements along all the frontages as required by the City of Portland. And the key to the design is really, as we're coming and connecting into Pendleton to the east, the ability to take the grade of Pendleton, have enough tangents, we can get down the grade. There's a big drop-off on that east property line, and we wanted to use that road grade to get down before we made the turn to connect into the northern portion of Pendleton. That allowed us to match grade at the Pendleton Street we were connecting to. The improvements are to city standard, as noted, planter strips, sidewalks, stormwater facilities. We're also providing sewer and water extensions to connect to existing utilities. All of the houses front on Pendleton Street are on the new Street A, or the extension of Pendleton. You'll note we didn't have any houses front on the 48th Avenue to the west, so we're not adding or having any driveways on 48th that might conflict with pedestrian traffic, although we are required to improve that frontage with the curb and the sidewalk and stormwater work. From a grading standpoint, again, the challenge with the grading of the site was to avoid impacts in the environmental zone. B, make the street connectivity between the existing grades of the Pendleton stub and the existing Pendleton street with the cul-de-sac, and provide buildable lots. I think we have an advantage of this developer being the home builder, so we were able to work with Everett Homes on really tailoring the type of lots and what type of homes will be built on that lot, on those lots, to help with the grading. There is a lot of slope, but again, our theory is that because the home builder is also the developer, we can do this as one large grading operation. A lot of times, if you have a different home builder, you might just build the roads only, possibly preserve some more trees, but as then the homes get built, they take up their building area as well, and you end up having more disturbance in smaller chunks at a time rather than being able to do it once. That helps with erosion control, with staging of construction, and really minimizes the amount of time that is needed to construct the project. This is just a note. There's, you know, a lot of talk about the grading on the site, and we do have some deep fills. This graphic shows with the plus marks the difference of grade between the existing grade and the proposed grade, and the real tall fills are down where we're trying to, where we've stayed out of the environmental zone with the retaining wall, and that's basically based on the fact that the existing ground is so steep there, and we're trying to match in. Alternatives. This is a layout that was done with a different application in 2014. It shows a cul-de-sac, lots fronting off Pendleton, a total disregard for the environmental zone, some lots that don't really have access. I don't know where it came from, but what it did is it provided us with the, we got the early assistance notes and were able to understand what the city's expectations were for the site in terms of connectivity, street improvements, storm drainage, et cetera. And then we went through and with our application looked at other alternatives, taking the city's connectivity goals to heart. At one point we had Street A connecting to the south, realizing there was really no extension possible in the future. We pulled that into a hammerhead type ability, which provided some more turning radius for the street. But based on city code and discussions with PBOT, we actually pulled it into more of a 90-degree angle, allowed us to provide some more room on the south property line. On this alternative, you can see a lot of grading and tree removal at the south property line. By pulling that 90-degree elbow up, we were able to, in our final condition, get away and leave some more buffer on that south property line. We also worked internally with alternatives of the lot 5 and getting completely out of the environmental zone impact. Another alternative
could you go over that again, please, a bit about lot 5, because that's, you considered not doing lot 5.
No, we can. At one point, we had impacts to the environmental zone from lot 5. So we pulled with our final plan, I think if I go back here, you'll see that we've pulled lot 5, any impacts, out of the environmental zone. So we changed some grades, moved the street around with the 90-degree corner. We were able to provide the right lot size, frontage, and to keep lot 5. But this one shows the hatched area is an impact to the environmental zone. With the final plan, we don't have any of the lot within that environmental zone.
Why did you choose to have the driveway so long on lot 5? It seems like the where you said the grading, it's also where the seep is, right?
I can show a plan where that seep was identified in the future here, and so if I can come back to that.
Okay, that'd be all right? Thank you. Okay.
So this was a alternative by the Hayhurst Neighborhood Association that said, hey, why don't we keep the road to the east? The challenge to this is, again, you don't get down the hill fast enough, and so you end up actually, we looked at it having more fill because you keep your road up on the east property line. Your road is, 50, you know, the right-of-way is wide. It's fairly, the road is flat, and then you end up being up higher in the road with those lots, not to mention that we're down to 8 lots. So we did look at quite a few alternatives in coming to our final plan. Stormwater management-wise, it's been discussed. We did a comprehensive stormwater management plan, met the city of BES requirements. We've gotten through their 30% public works. There's a large basin with few stormwater facilities in this part of town. We are providing stormwater facilities and upgrades to the culvert to manage the stormwater, as well as providing stormwater both on site. These are pictures of upstream on Pendleton Street. You can see there's no existing catch basins, no storm pipes. They all just go down the gutter line and flow over onto the property. The creek and the culvert down on 48th Avenue convey a lot of water, and we're improving that to city standards. So the stormwater facilities that we have on site are both for the public street runoff for those impervious areas, as well as the lighter green are individual stormwater planters that will be done with the house to manage the impervious area from the houses. You'll notice on lots 4 and 5 in the middle, we're actually taking the stormwater runoff after treatment from the rooftops and discharging it back into the environmental zone, which will go to the wetland area.
Where does the culvert go to in 48th? Where does it discharge?
The culvert water is running from the east to the west, so it comes down an existing drainage. There's an existing 18-inch culvert in here now that crosses the gravel road, and then it discharges out with this, the picture that I showed. Oops, I'm going the wrong way. This picture up in the right, that's the downhill side of that 18-inch culvert. So it continues to go into a drainage and heads to the west.
And what improvements are you doing into that creek, off that creek?
So we are replacing, with the widening of 48th Avenue, we are replacing the existing 18-inch culvert with a 36-inch culvert to meet the City of Portland design standards. And it will outfall on the west side of 48th Avenue, and then it goes into a short open channel piece, and then there's a 18-inch culvert downstream of there that goes under a private driveway, and then it opens up again further, I can show you back here, further to the west. This is all open channel that goes back here.
So are you doing any enhancements to the creek?
We are not doing any enhancements to the creek downstream of our site, or on our site for that matter, with the exception of the, as we build 48th Avenue, we have to widen out and we'll build sidewalk and do some mitigation through there for environmental zone impacts.
Okay, I'll ask BES about that afterwards. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to just talk briefly about the environmental zone. Again, we've minimized impacts. Those only impacts are for the 48th Avenue improvements. And we have an extensive mitigation planting plan that meets the city's requirements. This is the graphic that shows the overlay of the Seeps and Springs map that BES brought to us, and those locations are relative to our site plan. Greg Summers is here and can talk briefly about the Seeps and Springs within that area. Greg, if you wanted to.
Hello. My name is Greg Summers. I work with Anchor QEA, and I'm a professional wetland scientist. Just a couple things on the Seeps and Springs and why we don't feel that they meet the definition of Seeps and Springs. We heard some talk earlier about it being an aquifer. I just want to be clear that an aquifer is typically an area that stores groundwater, and storage of that water is important. And most people think of aquifers that you drop a well into and draw water out for, say, irrigation or something. But you can also have perched aquifers, as was mentioned previously. But the what's implicit in the definition of aquifer, though, is that it is stored water, which means it has water to provide. Now, the areas that we saw, you might have remember, I think most people remember, we had a little bit of rain this last winter. We had a lot of rain. And we were looking at these things in early March. By mid-March, there was no flow observed from any of these areas. If a spring or seep were indeed fed by an aquifer, or in my opinion, it is either a seep or a spring, you would see flow much longer into the year, particularly in a year like this. They can go dry, as is mentioned in the report, which I haven't had a chance to read all yet, but those are typically in droughty conditions. Obviously, we're not in a condition like that. So we'd expect those to be flowing, you know, much longer, and I just want to make a note that the only ones that were identified outside of the EC zone that would be unprotected were associated with a large hole that was dug for a perk test. So that water was likely coming out due to that, not from natural sources, even though I think most of the flow we saw this year was due to abnormally high water table as opposed to a seep or spring coming from an aquifer.
True. tree removal mitigation, we're meeting the standards of the 33630 standard. And a quick answer, 208 trees are on site and 97 of them will remain.
All right. Colleagues, any questions?
Time is up.
Well, I guess I think it was alluded to in your, I think it was your testimony, but so actually I'll say this for staff, all city staff, so never mind.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right.
President Udaly, I'm sorry, if I went over it too quickly, we were hoping that you would keep the written record open or continue the hearing. And we did not waive our final written argument. I apologize. I probably talked too quickly. At
no,
that
I
point.
Heard you so say that, and okay. I made meaningful eye contact with Lauren over here, who will.
Yeah. At this point, I would recommend that you continue through the rest of the hearing. The applicant does have a statutory right to final rebuttal and an opportunity once the record's closed to make any submit any final written argument, not new evidence. But he's also asking to keep the record open. So he's not entitled to keep the record open to submit any new evidence. If you do keep the record open, then you'll want to set an amount of time and then an opportunity for a response to that. So perhaps you might want to get through the rest of the hearing and then decide whether or not it's just whether it's keeping the record open for new evidence or just allowing him to submit his final written testimony, as he's also requested. There's two things there.
So will there still be a rebuttal today at the end?
It sounded as though he's not waiving his right to do to submit a written rebuttal seven days following the closure of the record. So there will be a rebuttal from the appellants, but then the applicant can rebut that.
Got it.
Thanks. Sorry.
So next up, we have any opponents of the appeal who have signed up?
Show one more person, T. Roman.
All right. Welcome. Please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Good afternoon. My name is Tom Roman, and I am here not as a representative of the developer, but as one of the property owners and on behalf of the other family members. This property was originally purchased in 1940, and since then, three generations have lived there in the same house and raised their families there. We have long-lasting friendships with many families in the area and strong ties to the community. With all of the competing interests and constraints placed on a property such as this, we believe the plan, as presented, will turn out to be in the best long-term interests of the neighborhood. Unlike other options that could be presented now or in the future, this plan includes single-family homes, a large conservation zone, and improvements required by the city. Due to the limited time, I'll focus my comments on three of the issues raised in the appeals form. One, preserving most of the existing trees is one of the goals of the group. It should be recognized that a large number of the trees are being preserved in the conservation zone, unlike on other projects. Some neighbors have asked that even more of the trees be removed than what's shown on the plans. Many of the trees are invasive species, and others present safety hazards. This winter alone, more than a dozen trees and major limbs fell, six onto the surrounding streets. We don't need another fatality from falling tree limbs in the southwest area. We believe it is more important to plant trees more suitable for a residential setting. Some opponents of the project have claimed that there are water features present throughout the property. However, multiple visits by city staff, Oregon Department of State Lands inspectors, and others have failed to locate such features in areas that are to be developed. If such features existed, they would have been obvious during one of the wettest seasons on record. Now the group opposed to the development has challenged the formal definition of the terms they have been misusing since it no longer serves their purpose. Connecting the sections of Pendleton Street across the property has been discussed many times, but one thing it does offer is the residents in the immediate area to avoid that single lane section of 48th that people have said is substandard, and it's also supported by multiple city bureaus. While we may want to see changes to this plan, we should be honest enough to admit that no plan will make all of the parties happy. So the council is now being asked if the plan prepared by the design team, recommended for approval by city staff, and approved by the hearings officer meets the city requirements, or were all of these groups wrong? The project is well into the third year since the developer started working on it. People have had the opportunity to voice their opinions. Further delays will only increase the tensions between the neighbors and drive up the cost of the homes. Can I finish one more sentence?
One more, very quickly.
We think that the council, we ask that the council reject the appeal, approve the development plan, and allow the neighborhood to begin to recover from this process as they welcome 11 new families into this community. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. All right. Finally, we have a rebuttal by the appellant, and you have 5 minutes.
Hello again, Peggy Hennessy.
Thank you.
On behalf of the Neighborhood Association. And I'd just like to address a couple of things that Mr. Robinson brought up. First, he stresses the Kittleson report and how they have a complete traffic analysis. Well, most of the Kittleson report talks about, you know, capacity of the intersections and those kinds of things, trip generation from the houses. But we're challenging the interference with the safe route to school program, and we're challenging this because the code requires you to consider all modes of transportation, and we're talking pedestrians and bicycles, and it's up to you to interpret the code and what that means. It can be part of the transportation approval criterion. Mr. Robinson also said that staff recommended approval of this proposal. And the only thing we've seen in the record is staff's recommendation of denial because there wasn't enough information to show that there were no seeps that were outside of the environmental zone. And that's clearly set forth in Exhibit 2 to our submittal today. And on another note, we'd like to point out that Mr. Summers is not a hydrologist. We have our expert hydrologist who can speak further to the issues surrounding the aquifer.
Yeah, well, again, the definitions of an aquifer are fairly straightforward. It's a unit that can store and transmit water. The definition has kind of been in play. In my written report, I also cite even a groundwater textbook that was available at the time said there's probably no term in hydrology that has more shades of meaning than an aquifer, which means it's a fairly broad term. It's contextual. I mean, I had professors in hydrology that were real sticklers for terminology. If you were walking someplace and you saw a spring and you said, well, I wonder what the size of that aquifer is and what the recharge is, they wouldn't go crazy going, you can't call that an aquifer. Aquifer is a water body that stores and transmits water. If you see a spring, it's been stored, it's been transmitted. It's fairly simple.
Finally, Susan King again from Hayhurst, and the point that I would like to close with that was not made during my previous testimony is that the applicant has made no valid attempt to develop alternatives to this 11-home proposal. As far as I know, even though I have not memorized the city code, there is no minimum number of lot requirements for this development. And in that case, Hayhurst did attempt, by way of example only, to provide some alternatives. And we would remind the city council that fewer homes could be built on this property, which may not survive the economic interest, but certainly may address the issues with respect to the water on the property, the connectivity issues, and other concerns that we have for safety. And for that reason, of course, we are asking that you deny the application and support our appeal. Thank you.
Madam President, I have a question if I could.
Yes, Commissioner Fish.
By the way, thank you for your excellent testimony. I'd like to give you an opportunity to address the connectivity issue from sort of the other side of the public safety ledger. And I understand the issue you've raised, and the question of safe routes to school is near and dear to my heart. I have a seventh grader at home, formerly a seventh grader, now soon to be an eighth grader.
Right.
One of the benefits, though, of connectivity is it makes it easier for emergency vehicles, fire, ambulance, and others to get in and do their business. So would you address that for me? I mean, that's one of the values that the city promotes through connectivity. And it does seem to me, looking at these diagrams, that there would be a benefit of being able to get emergency vehicles through the development with a connected road.
Let me do my best, Commissioner. The slope, I think you've heard in prior testimony, the slope that would be required if the both ends of Southwest Pendleton are connected to each other. And I would say that the slope would play into your question of how easy would it be for emergency vehicles to get up and down. Obviously, this last winter is not a good indication of how difficult driving in Southwest Portland is, but I would point to that as an issue that may come into play with that. Certainly, there would be additional, there's no getting around it, there would be additional ways that fire trucks, ambulance vehicles, et cetera, could access the property. But the steep grade that you've already heard about, I think, should be factored into that answer as well.
Okay, thank you.
Can I expand on that? Hi, Randy Sachs again, Hayhurst Neighborhood Association. Almost adjacent to this site, there was another development that was built about 20 years ago known as Flower Place. Flower Place has a standard right-of-way, but the street, it dead ends with a barricade. The barricade is removable for emergency access. The Hayhurst Neighborhood Association, time and time again, has requested just looking at some sort of alternative, whether it's a barricade so that cars can't get through, but bikes and pedestrians can, but emergency vehicles could. I don't even know if an emergency vehicle would be able to make the turns. The streets are very tight. There's a steep downgrade, and then it's like a right angle and another right angle. But all that the Neighborhood Association has been asking this whole time is, can we look at an alternative? Can we look at building 5 homes on Southwest Pendleton without having the street coming through and having a cul-de-sac at the top of the property and maybe going from 11 homes to 8 homes? There are other alternatives. Every plan that the applicant has submitted, they showed as alternatives, but they all had 11 homes. They have never looked at fewer homes, and that's been one of the major issues for the Neighborhood Association from day one.
Okay, thank you very much.
In addition to which, you do have the ability to limit the number of homes, too, under your own code provision. When you're doing an environmental review, you can modify the standards and set a limit on the number of homes if it's necessary to protect the resource or to expand the seep and spring to an environmentally protected tract. So that's within your power.
I believe since it's a landslide hazard area too, that automatically sets no minimum density. Susan, you might want to come back, or please come back, because I was going to ask you a question. And that is, what would be the response of the neighborhood if instead of doing single-family homes, they did duplexes or townhouses in order to avoid some of the impacts that you're concerned about?
We have not discussed alternatives in terms of higher density housing. I think our preference would be, if I can speak for what I understand to be most of my neighbors' concerns, our preference is to preserve the single-family home nature of our neighborhood, which is longstanding. Our preference is to protect the R7 zoning, and our preference would be for the applicant to consider some valid alternatives that might result in fewer homes. We do have duplexes in our neighborhood under the current infill that is allowed on corner lots, and those have worked out well. But moving to higher density, I think, is beyond the scope of our testimony today.
Yeah, I know you haven't had that discussion. And as you know, you can't put a duplex on a corner. So since they're creating several corners, that might be a way to have still single-family homes that are on their own lot, perhaps even, that would be less expensive, because we heard several of the neighbours concerned about affordable housing, and also potentially have less impact on the resource. But that was never discussed. The applicant never proposed anything like that.
There have been no other, nothing besides 11 single-family homes has ever been discussed. Not 10, not 9, only 11 single-family homes.
Thank you.
And I have a question about the safe routes to school. I just want to make sure I understand. So currently this lot provides a route, traffic-free route for students. And if it's developed as proposed, those students would no longer be able to cut through. Would they then use the new street, or would they be more likely to use the unimproved street?
Let me see if I can answer that without a picture in front of us.
Yeah, it's a little confusing.
Currently, students and others walk along Southwest 48th, and they have two options. They can continue on Southwest 48th to the south, past the site property, and through a gate that crosses private property connecting to Southwest Iowa. And Southwest Iowa is the street on which Hayhurst Elementary is located. The other option that students have, which my son used almost exclusively, is to go from Southwest Cameron down Southwest 48th and make a right turn on Southwest Pendleton and actually cross the corner of the school lot and enter Hayhurst across the back part of the Hayhurst property. So I know of no proposal that precludes students, should this development occur as proposed, precludes students from continuing on Southwest 48th to Southwest Iowa to get to school. But there is another alternative, which is to go west on Southwest Pendleton and connect with the Hayhurst School property. Did that answer your question?
Can I add one thing to that? What I would add is that the reason that we're saying that the safe route to school would be changed is that the street that, when you walk down Southwest 48th Avenue currently, you're walking into all dead-end streets. If there would be the ability for cars to come through the subdivision, as children, elderly people walking their dogs are walking down Southwest 48th Avenue, which is a hill and a blind hill, there could be cars coming now through from the development that could be basically intersecting at that corner of 48th and Pendleton. So that's why the route would have a problem. Yeah.
Okay, so the route would be the same or similar except for the addition of the
traffic.
The
vehicular traffic, correct.
But there are many intersections where there are cars going all the way for children walking through. I'm with you, Commissioner Daly. I didn't understand why this would be so different from other intersections, crossroads, that kids might be walking along.
Well, there are no sidewalks on most of the route, and
right,
currently there's the only vehicular traffic that would be coming as people are walking would be from, maybe 10 homes.
But there's got to be other crossroads in the neighborhood that, it's a fairly wide catchment area.
Sure. But this route where everybody walks from north of Cameron down Southwest 48th is the only pedestrian or the only street that you can walk through to get to the other side of the neighborhood. Everything else is a dead end that abuts a wooded area.
And the concern would be improving Pendleton
without improving Southwest 48th, the portion that doesn't have sidewalks or wouldn't have sidewalks. It'd probably be easier to show.
But aren't they going... They're going down towards the private pathway, right, where it crosses private property.
It's not really. If you saw it in person, it's not crossing. It's privately owned, but it is like a big driveway, and the owners actually of that private property are here, and it's openly used by everybody.
But the cars wouldn't be going down there, would
they? Sure, no.
So it's just at the intersection of Pendleton and 48th that you're concerned?
And between Cameron and Pendleton. That's the area of concern.
I'm going to need a map of the area.
I'm happy to show it to you if you need me to.
Thank you.
I'd be happy to take a walk.
So there was a testimony from Mr. Hale, I believe, about the school district boundary extending to the north. Does anybody... I just don't know if you know that offhand. Is that...
I don't know personally, because it was. I think that the Hayhurst boundary was expanded across Beaverton Hillsdale Highway. Is that what it was?
Right.
With the boundary changes this past year, where the Odyssey program was moved, they took the Odyssey program out of Hayhurst, and then they expanded the boundary to bring more students into the school.
North of Beaverton Hillsdale.
Correct.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. I'd like to call staff back up, I think, for council discussion. Good. It sounds like we have some questions. So PBOT, BDS, and who else do we have here? BES, I think?
BES, yes.
I think we have 6 seconds left. And,
oh, sure.
And I would like to request that the record remain open for all of us.
Oh, you've gone 6 over, but yes.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Keep that going the other way.
All right.
Come on in for a second.
Got it.
I'm thinking.
So you're